Hi. How you doing? Good evening. This is really close. Can you hear? Okay. When I was in Yeshiva College, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Shlita spoke in Yeshiva University, and the theme of the address was supposed to be the purpose of Talmud Torah. But the language that was used for the sign was the end of learning. And he started off the lecture by saying that many people came thinking that the topic was the cessation of Talmud Torah, Chas V'Shalom, but that was certainly not what he wanted to talk about. He was very anti that, actually, and the goal was something else. So I'm also going to spend the first few minutes talking about what we're not doing. First of all, this is not going to be stand-up comedy. Hope that's not too disappointing. We have an open mic if you want to use it later, but for now we're going to be a little bit more straight. It's also not going to be not going to get up here and do impersonations. If you're looking for that, you can certainly come back 1 week from tonight, and we can talk about that a little bit also. What it's definitely not is the kind of thing you can find in any Jewish newspaper. It's not a discussion of which comedians are Jewish or anything like that, or the history of the Jewish people in comedy. Not here to shock anybody with a revelation that Mel Brooks is Jewish. It's not going to surprise anyone. And it's definitely not what we're talking about. What I am a little more interested in is maybe what might come across a little bit more like a Torah Ramada lecture, so to speak. That I remember I once read an article in the Torah Ramada journal, and there was a line that struck me very much. That the article, I think it was in a footnote, the article was discussing the various advantages of secular studies, various advantages of Mada, and one of the things it said as an example in a footnote is that the author was having a conversation with certain Rosh Yeshiva, and he was discussing an Abbott and Costello skit. And this Rosh Yeshiva expressed tremendous hana at recalling that skit, and he seemed to be having a great time. And the author of the article asked him, so Nu, according to you, that if you're going to take an anti-Mada perspective, so you're saying that that Hana is worthless, there's no place within Judaism for that Hana? And he said he didn't really have a response. So that line in itself struck me, not so much necessarily because of the argument or because of other elements, but because this was the first place I ever saw in print anyone officially categorizing Abbott and Costello as Mada. And I think it's true. I think it's not such a shock to say that there's a link between Bereshis and Who's On First. And that element, that comedy and that humor in general, has a large place within Jewish Hashkafa and Jewish Halacha, I think is definitely a true one. And get to have a little physical comedy also, a little slapstick. So all of these elements, this element is something that I think is true. And so that's what I'd like to talk a little bit about tonight, particularly in honor of Purim coming up. So to focus a little bit specifically on the relationship of Purim to this concept of the place of humor and comedy within Torah, both al-pi hashkafa, a little bit al-pi derech hadrush, and also within the realm of halacha as well. So first of all, just on a very basic level, so it has been pointed out a lot that there is a strong kinship between the Jewish people and comedy. And again, without going into the details of that, which has been very much overdone, but we know that the Jewish people are often identified with comedians, and it's usually mentioned, it's usually given as an explanation, that that's a byproduct of persecution. That as a way to survive being persecuted throughout the generations, that the only way to respond is by laughing it all off, is by shrugging it all away, and by developing a sense of humor. So that's a basic way to cope. And that's certainly true. On a certain very basic level, certainly that. And you do find that not only in the analyses in the psychological books, you find this in Sfarim also. Rabbi Schechter quotes from Rabbi Shamshon Fall Hirsch. Probably not to Schechter. Rabbi Schechter is going to be a source of information on a lot of these topics. But one thing Rabbi Schechter quotes is from Rabbi Shamshon Fall Hirsch. Rabbi Shamshon Fall Hirsch in his Perush on Chumash comments on the phrase that the Jewish people said when they came out of Egypt, and then they realized that things weren't going so smoothly, and they were being threatened in the desert as well. So their reaction is "Hamibli ein kvarim b'Mitzrayim." What's wrong? There weren't enough graves in Egypt. You're going to take us out to die here. The only reason we left Egypt is because there weren't enough graves. We have to die in Egypt. We have to die in the desert. That's the whole point of leaving Egypt. So it's very unlikely they really thought that was the point. So Reb Shamsha Fal Hirsch observes that this is an example of sarcasm. And this is an example, in case you didn't notice, and this is an example of the Jewish people reacting to their crises, reacting to their threats by dealing with it through humor. So this idea that you find in a lot of psychological textbooks and a lot of sociological commentary, so it is rooted in Sfarim. Reb Shamsha Fal Hirsch writes, it points out, seems to really be pashut pshat when you think about it, it's hard to really see what else was going on, that does seem to be the behavior of the Jewish people from their earliest times as a people, and that element is certainly there. And to that extent, so it's really an aspect of your basic health, your basic ability to function in the world, the basic v'nishmartim olu nafsha seichem, your basic ability to be able to function in a tough world where things are always causing problems and where issues are always coming up. So you're not going to be able to function if you're not able to relax a little bit, if you're not able to step back and to laugh things off and to say that some things that happen aren't such a big deal, so you're not going to be able to survive. So an element of your basic health, an element of your basic survival in this world, that's certainly true. The humor definitely plays that role. My friend Neil Fleischman related this story about the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov related a story about somebody else, that he once saw somebody who was drowning. Assuming this isn't really a true story. He saw somebody who was drowning in the ocean, and he didn't know how to save him. Couldn't figure out, didn't know how to swim, he was too far out. Didn't know what he was going to be able to do in order to deal with the problem. So in desperation, he just yelled out to the guy, "Give my regards to Leviathan," which wasn't really going to be so helpful. But the guy laughed, and when he laughed, he regained his composure. And when he regained his composure, he was able to balance himself and he was able to swim to safety. And the Besht used this as a way of expressing the idea that very often you find yourself drowning, you find yourself so swamped in and you feel like you're suffocating, you feel like you're drowning, and you can step back and you can laugh a little bit, that can literally save your life. And it's not always going to be exactly like that example in the story, but it's true, and as far as your mental health is concerned, there really is that element. So as this idea that the sociologists have and the psychologists have, that humor has served that role for the Jewish people throughout the generations, so that's unquestionably true. And to that extent, so once we've established it's valuable for you, so then you are being involved in bringing it to others, so that becomes the basic function of chesed. And we're perhaps familiar with the phrase, the Gemara has in Maseches Tainis, which was actually my high school yearbook quote, that the Talmud tells us that Rav Broka Choza was in the marketplace, and he saw Rabbi Yohanan Navi. So he figured he can get some inside information about how to get in good upstairs. So he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, he said, "Lou, tell me, there's all kinds of different people in this marketplace, there's all kinds of different people in this shuk. So which one of them is going to make it in the end of the day? Which one of them is going to make it upstairs?" So he pointed out a couple of people. Some of them are a little bit longer of a story. But he pointed out one group of guys in the back also. And he didn't say what they did in order to make the story a little more dramatic. So Ruka Chazal went up to these two people. He wanted to know what exactly is it about these people that makes them such exalted members of the Olam Haba, Bnei Alma Da'asi. And he asked them what they did, and they told him, "Anshei beduche anan kamadabchinan atzivi," that we are basically jesters, we're basically clowns, we make people happy, and for that, so we are zoche to Olam Haba. So that, of course, is a very powerful statement, that the idea of just being somebody who cheers people up, just being somebody who's able to introduce humor, and the word beducha, as beduchusa, is normally used in a context of joking specifically, that idea that in itself can earn you a chelek lo haba is a very powerful statement of the type of kindness that you do when you bring humor into people's lives. So on the one hand, it's certainly a chesed, it's in the parasha of Yehavta L'Recha Kamocha, if it's something you'd want for yourself, and it's certainly something that you're helping others by bringing, if we're going to say that it's an aspect of Nishmartim Adl Nafsho Seichem, so then it enters into life-saving techniques as well. Laughter is the best medicine, as the Reader's Digest is fond of emphasizing. So there, there's aspects of Hashivosolo, aspects of Lo Samro Dam Reyacha, all the different elements that are involved in Chesed, certainly a major component of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim when it's used in that context. So all of those definitely flow as well out of this basic value of humor. So on the one hand, that's really a very basic, fundamental, starting level value that clearly has value in the hashkafic and halachic world as well, that humor is valuable simply as a coping mechanism, as a type of healing mechanism, whether it's valuable for you yourself, whether it's something that we recommend that you incorporate into your own basic perspective, your own basic life view, or whether it's something that you go out of your way to share with others, either way, humor has that clear value. Now, the Gemara is also very emphatic that humor plays a major role as a teaching tool as well. And that the Gemara is explicit about, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Amud Beis, and it's an idea that appears throughout, you've probably all heard about, that the Gemara records the recommendation that one starts the shir with a milsa d'beduchasa. That starting the shir with a joke is a way of opening people's minds a little bit, it's a way of breaking the ice, and the Gemara seems to value that very highly as a pedagogical tool. And indeed, the Gemara itself is rife with such examples. You find jokes throughout. Somebody told me once that Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan was asked, "Rabbi, are there any jokes in the Talmud?" And his response was, "Yes, but they're all old." If you look at the Talmud, you do find a lot of jokes. There was an article in the journal Badad, which is the Bar Ilan journal, B'tchol D'Racher HaDe'eyu, so it has a long article on the topic of jokes in the Talmud. The article is in very complicated Hebrew, so I have no idea what it says, but it clearly seems to be making some point that there are a lot of jokes in the Talmud, and there's also charts. So it's got some deep analysis of the jokes. I don't totally understand it, because I don't know what all the words mean, but the point is definitely there. The Talmud is full of jokes. Perhaps the most famous one, just to mention, is you probably heard before, the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim, the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Tes tells us that you have to be worried when you're cleaning out your house for chametz. So you have to be worried about the presence of chametz that may have been dragged in by a weasel, a chulda. And the Gemara says that perhaps this is a bigger concern on the 14th of Nisan than it would be on any other day. Because any other day, so you're always going to buy more chametz, so the weasel's not going to find a need to hide the chametz specifically. But on the 14th, when the chametz is being cleared away, so the weasel's going to have a greater desire to make sure that there's chametz left to eat later. So Gemara asks a very apparent question, that why are we assuming that the weasel's so on top of things? Why are we assuming that this weasel knows that you're not going to be having chametz anymore that night, that he's got to prepare for the future? So the Gemara asks, V'chi chulda nevi'i? Is this chulda a prophetess? And that's humorous, because in Jewish history we did have a nevi'i by the name of chulda. So that's what the Gemara is picking up on. The Gemara says, V'chi chulda nevi'i? Is chulda nevi'i that she's going to know to hide the chametz? And that's one of many examples. A lot of the other examples you have to work a little harder at getting, but especially if you don't know what all the words mean in the article. But there are a lot of examples, and there are entire svarim devoted to this. It's the idea that there are a lot of jokes in the Talmud, and in general, the Talmud itself recommends this as an idea, as a tool of teaching in most of the Beduchas. The Gemara does ask that this is contrary a little bit to the attitude that we normally have towards learning. And this is a point that I want to get back to a little bit later, but we normally understand, this is not the specific way the Gemara phrases the question, but we normally have an idea that the Torah was given, b'eimu v'yiru v'reses v'zeyu, the Torah was given in a very intense, scary way, that we stood there very awe-inspired and very prepared to get something totally unbelievable. And it seems that having a joking atmosphere is a little bit contradictory to that. So the Gemara already asked that in Brachas and Daf Lamed, excuse me, in Shabbos and Daf Lamed, how could it be that the Gemara is recommending joking around during the shir? So the Gemara gives two answers. There's one, that the idea that you have to learn with such a serious mindset, so that's only applying to the Talmidim. The Rebbeim can do whatever they want. It's a good motivation to go into Chinuch. You can be free to make as many jokes as you want. Talmidim, they have to sit there seriously. Or the other answer the Gemara has, which is one I want to come back to later, because I think it's very important on a lot of levels, the other answer the Gemara has is that this is talking about the initial part of the shir, that the Rebbe can open up with a joke. But once it gets to the content, so the content is serious. So once it gets to the middle part is serious. But the opening part is a joke. There is another sociological element that could be related to this. I hope any females in the room will forgive me for making this observation, but just sociologically, it seems to be that, just not to sound so chauvinistic with this, but just if you look at the numbers, comedy in general seems to be a male-dominated industry. That the majority of people who have been successful in comedy seem to be of the male persuasion, and as we know, lekemidi delor berimizi baraisa, that there's no reality in the world that's not hinted to in the Torah already. So, this is something that Rabbi Shechter pointed out as well, not together with a sociological observation, but the rest of it, that we know that this is really in Eishes Chayil. that one of the praises of the wife that said in Eshes Chayil is Pia Pascha B'Chachma. That when she starts talking, so she starts with Chachma, V'Taris Chesed Al-Lashona, etc. So L'Chara, that's a stira, right? We've already established, the Gemara says, that when you start talking in Torah, so you start with the Milsa B'Duchas, so you start with the joke. So why is it that the Eshes Chayil Pia Pascha B'Chachma, that even when she starts off talking, she already starts off with Chachma? So there is an explanation. I think it's from the Baal HaFlar, but Shechter wasn't 100% sure where it's from. I think it may be from the HaFlar, the Chasam Sofer, that the idea is that the motivation for the joke at the beginning of the shir, so that's to chase away the Yetzer Hara, that there's a serious atmosphere that comes along with learning, so that could be very scary, that could be very daunting. You're not going to want to get involved in learning if everything's too serious. So you have to chase away the Yetzer Hara. So the joke at the beginning is a way of taking the steam out of the Yetzer Hara. But a woman who's involved in learning, so is not as same level of obligation, right? It's doing it b'toras enos mitzuva, ena mitzuva v'yosa, as without the clear obligation. And Tosfos explains that the distinction between one who is commanded and one who is not commanded is that a person who has a commandment has a greater yetzer hara not to do the mitzvah. So therefore, when a man is learning, so he has the yetzer hara not to learn, so he has to start with a joke in order to chase away the yetzer hara. But an isha who's learning is doing it as an eino mitzuva v'yosa, without this obligation, so therefore the Yetzer Hara is not as strong, so there isn't as much of a need to scare away the Yetzer Hara, to send it away with the milsa de beduchasa, and that's why in Eshes Chayil we say Pia Pascha B'Chachma. Could be. In any case, this whole idea that the joke is to scare away the Yetzer Hara, so you don't see that as much if you look at the Gemara in Shabbos and in Rishonim. But there, the Gemara seems to highlight an idea more of opening the das, more of harchavas das, to use a phrase elsewhere that comes up elsewhere in Shas. They have this idea that things are done better, and especially Torah is done more effectively through harchavas das. And when one's mind is broadened, so to speak, it's a little bit of a question what that means. It's worth discussing at length. But in general, the Gemara says that when a person has nice things in his life, so that evokes a harchavas hadas, that evokes a mood where a person's mind is more open and more receptive, and that's considered to be a very positive thing in the context of learning, and the Gemara identifies that as being a quality of a Talmid Chacham. A Talmid Chacham has a harchavas hadas, and that's something that's very valuable in the sphere of learning, so therefore one could understand that the joke plays a very important role. Creating that atmosphere, creating that mindset, is crucial to having the proper approach towards learning as a whole. And that leads us into another very important element that is there within the whole aspect of humor. And again, this is something that Rabbi Shechter emphasizes in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav, that we have a very hard to understand Gemara that will be Daf Yomi in just about a week. Think about it, maybe about a week from today. Avodah Zarah and Daf Gimel Amud Beis. So the Gemara tells us something very strange. The Gemara tells us that, in case you were wondering, so the Gemara tells us what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's schedule is. And you don't have a hard enough time with your own schedule in college, you know what God's schedule is. So among the things that the Gemara tells us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu does every day, so one third of his day, the Talmud tells us, he plays with Leviathan. He plays with a giant fish, the one who was given regards in the earlier part of the discussion. So that fish, a Kadosh Baruch Hu plays with that fish for one third of the day. Thank you. So why exactly do we need to know that? Why exactly is that considered part of Torah Shebaal Peh? Why is that something that Chazal felt that this was something we need to know about? So Rabbi Shechter quotes from Rabbi Soloveitchik, that Rabbi Soloveitchik in his Hesped for Rav Moshe Shatzkis, who was a Rebbe here in Yeshiva, so Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, what is that Gemara getting at? That a lot of the things that we're told about in the Gemara and in the Chumash, a lot of things that we're told about from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the things that the Torah tells us about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Gemara tells us, very often, what's the point? Why do we have Sefer Bereishis? As the Rav explained, why do we have Parshas Bereishis specifically? Why do we have to know the whole story of creation? So that's because we have a mitzvah, a very fundamental mitzvah of V'halachta B'drachav, that we have to know how to imitate the qualities of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to imitate his midos. So therefore, we have to know what those midos are. And that's how the Rav explained why we're told the story of creation, because we have to know how to be creative. That's an integral part of Jewish life. That's an integral part of being a Torah personality. So apparently, playing with Leviathan is also part of a halachta b'drachah. How is that true? So as the Rav explained, you shouldn't take everything so seriously. not everything's such a big deal. You have to have a little bit of room in your life to be playful, a little bit of your room to, in your life, in your perspective, to say that not everything is so crucial, not everything is going to be such a disaster. And that is a very integral part of your perspective of the world. That's a very integral part of how you relate to existence. And apparently that's a kiyum in the halachta bedrachim. That's a kiyum in imitating the ways of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Could perhaps maybe add another element to this, maybe take it another step further. In general, the Achronim discuss what exactly is added. When the Torah tells us you have a mitzvah of halachta bedrachim, so for the most part, the Talmud understands that the focus of a lot of halachta bedrachim is midos. That mahu rachum v'chanan, afata rachum v'chanan, that just as the Kaddish Baruch Hu is kind and merciful and visits the sick and comforts the mourners, so too, that's something that we should do. So many Mefarshim ask, why do we need that? That a lot of these mitzvahs, or all these mitzvahs, are really covered by the idea of chesed. That the Torah tells us, v'yahav to l'reicha kamocha, and as the Rambam understands, as others understand, that there is a mitzvah in general to do chasadim and to make sure everyone's needs are taken care of. So why do I need another pasuk telling me that I should be like a Kaddish Baruch Hu in the way that he takes care of people? So I know that I have to visit the sick because of halachta bedrachav, and I know I have to visit the sick because of v'yahav to l'reicha kamocha. Why do I need both mitzvahs telling me the same thing? So this is something that a lot of Mefarshim discuss. And the approach that appears a lot is that, yes, v'yahav to l'reicha kamocha, that's important for the other person, so I visit the sick for his needs, and I comfort the mourner for his needs. But there's also an element for myself, an element of my own midos that I have to work upon for myself. And that aspect, even if the behavior is the same, it's that aspect that's addressed by the halachta bedrachav. Thought maybe you could add another little element to it, that perhaps when we say that halachta bedrachav in itself motivates these actions for you, it's also adding another element. That it's one thing when I visit the sick because of v'yahav to l'reicha kamocha, so then I'm visiting the sick in order to help that person. But when I do it for halachta bedrachav, on the one hand I'm doing it for my own midos, but also you could say there's another element there, that the halachta bedrachav is realized by trying to do it in a divine way. That trying to imitate the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Menachem Avelim, the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mevaker Cholim, so we try to do that also. What does that mean practically? And Midrashim sound like this. And a comment the Midrashim have that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can really be Menachem Avelim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can really comfort a mourner, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows his plan, and he knows that ultimately everything that happens is for the best. And we try to make that point when we pay a shiva call, we try to cheer people up, but we can only do it on a superficial level. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do it with absolute knowledge, knowing what his plans are, and knowing that everything he does is for the best. So perhaps when we're told, the halachta bedrachav, that we're supposed to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our nichum avelim, that the idea is that we're supposed to try to strive for a divine perspective, and know that the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the idea gemura, that everything's going to work out, so too, that's the element we try to convey when we're Menachem Avelim as well. So too, this could be an element here also, that the idea of having a sense of humor, the idea of having a sense of the absurd, so to speak, is really one of perspective. Is that really, if you have the long view of life, so then you know that the things that happen on a day-to-day basis really aren't such a big deal. And the things that annoy us and that frustrate us and upset us every day, so they're really funny things. But it's hard for us to see that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can see that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sees the world with the entire perspective, who sees the world from beginning to end and knows his plan, so he knows what's really funny. He knows that there are things that seem to us like a very big deal, like they're horrible tragedies, but they're really just little blips, and they're really funny, and as we always say, we're going to look back at this and laugh. You know, that with somebody once pointed out that comedy is tragedy plus time. You know, you have enough time, you have enough perspective, so you can look back and laugh. So that component is there. So when we say that having a sense of humor is a key, when the Rav said having a sense of humor is a key in v'halachta bedrachav, that perhaps that's really the idea, that the perspective that allows a sense of humor, that's a divine perspective, the ability to try to look at the world in its totality and to try to focus on what's a big deal and what's not. So that really is how we imitate the divine, and having a sense of humor, and that's the message of playing with Leviathan. So one could suggest that that's also what the Gemara means in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that even though we seem to find so many indications that schok, that laughter seems to be a wonderful thing, at the same time we know, and we'll come back to this a little bit later, that we find certain lines in the Talmud which seem to give us a little bit the other direction, one of which is the Gemara Maseches Brachos, where the Gemara says that also li'odom l'malei schok piv ba'olam hazeh, that it's inappropriate, that it's forbidden for a person to fill his mouth with laughter in this world. And that's because the Pasuk says in Shir HaMalos, oz yimalei schok pinu, that then, at that time of the Geula, that's when our mouth will be filled with laughter. So that means that ba'olam hazeh, that now it's aser, it's forbidden for a person to fill his mouth with laughter. So one might suggest that that's really a similar idea also, that laughter is appropriate, ba'olam hazeh, that trying to strive for a perspective that makes the funny funny, and makes the absurd absurd, so that's a good idea. But l'malei schok piv, to say that you really totally understand everything, and that everything that should be funny is funny, that we don't really have, because we know that we don't totally understand the world, and we know that that's something that's reserved for the future. So to preempt that, and to totally be l'malei piv schok, to say your mouth is filled with laughter, that you understand everything, so that's inappropriate, because that's not given to this world. This world is still something we don't totally understand, and we can only take it on trust, and we can laugh for now, but we wait for the time when there'll really be full laughter, when we can really look back and laugh at everything, and that's the oz yamalei schok pinu that we await with such anticipation. Now, one could suggest that this is really the theme of Purim itself. That on Purim we have this focus of really putting everything in perspective, and the laughter and the joking around of Purim, one could suggest, really comes out of this element. That we know that the Pesukim indicate, the way the Gemara understands, the Pesukim in the end of Megillas Esther, towards the end of the Megillah, so the Pasuk says, Kimu v'kibel, Kimu v'kiblu, it's a Kriya Ksiv, that the Jews accepted something at the end of the Megillah, and the Gemara understands, Kimu masha kiblu kvar, that they then reestablished what they accepted once, that there was an acceptance of the Torah at Har Sinai, but that really wasn't so willing, that when the Jewish people accepted the Torah at Har Sinai, they weren't really so excited. They kind of accepted it against their will. They had a little thing of a mountain hanging on top of their heads. And then they, later on, after the incident of Purim, so then when they had a different perspective on things, so then they accepted the Torah willingly. The Medrash Tanchum, I think in Parashas Noach, comments that the Jewish people didn't accept the Torah willingly at Har Sinai. It means, yeah, the Torah Shebichsav, that they were willing to take, but the Torah Shebal Peh, with all its chumras and all its details, that seemed like such a burden, that seemed like such a big deal, that wasn't going to be something they were going to be able to accept. That seemed like it was too negative, it seemed like it was too oppressive, so that they didn't want to accept, and they only took that willingly. And then, apparently, after the incident of Purim, so then they accepted the Torah willingly. And the idea there seems to be as well, that when we have a short-range perspective, when we have a very limited view, so things seem bad and things seem hard, but when you can look at it back, you can look back at it through the prism of history and see things more in perspective, so then you see the beauty of things. You see how wonderful things are, even when they seemed burdensome and oppressive at the time. So perhaps this is really a major theme within Purim, that that's what Purim is about. Purim is about looking back through history and seeing those things that were scary, those things that were oppressive, perhaps really they were beautiful, perhaps really they were wonderful, and this is the aspect of humor, of being able to look back and laugh, look back and feel joy. And that element, one could suggest, is really inherent in Purim itself. And you find an interesting halachic concept in Purim also, and this will segue into some of the practices that we have on Purim, God willing, that in general, so we know we have a mitzvah of Simchas Purim, the mitzvah to be happy on Purim. And one would think that it's not so different than the mitzvah of Simcha that we find in other Yom Tov. We have a mitzvah of Samachta B'chogecha in general, certainly applies to Pesach and to Sukkot and Shavuos, probably applies on some degree to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur also, that's the discussion, but it certainly have a concept of Simchas Yontif Min HaTorah. So one would have assumed that Purim is a Yontif Midrabanan, so we know it's not on the same level as Yontif Min HaTorah, but one would assume that Kol Tokin Rabbanan Kein D'Raisa Tokin, that the rabbis pattern themselves after Din and Min HaTorah. So one would have assumed that the Simcha of Purim is a rabbinical version of the Simcha of Pesach or the Simcha of Shavuos or something like that. But you find certain differences. The Shulchan Aruch, for example, the Shulchan Aruch rules that it is permissible, if you can find the time, it's permissible to get married on Purim. And that's normally prohibited on Pesach, let's say, certainly on Yontif itself is prohibited, but even on Chol HaMoed, on Chol HaMoed Pesach, on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, when the Isser Malacha is different, still we find an Isser D'Araisa to get married on that time. And that's because the Gemara says, Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. The Gemara learns that out from Sukkim. It's assumed that's a Din Min HaTorah, as Tosfos emphasizes. that we assume Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. It's not proper to mix two Simchas. It's a contradiction to one Simcha to have another Simcha going on at the same time. So if you're supposed to be focused on Simchas Yantif, so to introduce the Simchas of a wedding, at that time, so one's going to dilute the other. They're going to contradict each other. So the striking thing is, the Shulchan Aruch rules, you can get married on Purim. And he's based on it, Shivas HaRashba, and others agree. But there are others who asked in the Shulchan Aruch, thought this was incorrect, that we should assume that even if you're going to say that Purim is the Yantif Midrabanan, okay, but still, why would we not assume that Chazal patterned the Yontif after Yom Tov Min HaTorah? And the same way, it's inappropriate Min HaTorah to get married on Sukkot, it should be inappropriate Midrabanan at least to get married on Purim. So there are a number of different approaches to this question, a number of different explanations as to where exactly Purim and Yontif Daraisa differentiate from each other. One approach, I think if I remember correctly, it's in the Tshuvas Ksav Sofer, it could be somewhere else, is that there is a fundamental difference in the way the Simcha manifests itself. In that on Pesach, so the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif is to rejoice in the Yontif, is to rejoice in the fact that it's Pesach right now, is to rejoice in the fact that it's Sukkot right now. So if you're going to get married, if you're going to have a wedding on that day, so that's going to be a dilution of that Simcha. That's going to take away from the Simcha of Pesach, the Simcha of Shavuos. But on Purim, the whole structure is different. That on Purim, the mitzvah is to feel simcha on that day, and anything that you do that brings about simcha on that day is a kiyum in Simcha's Purim. And it's fundamentally different from Pesach. That Pesach, you have to feel simcha in the fact that it's Pesach. And on Purim, it's just that you have to be happy on Purim. And other things that you're going to do, even if it's getting married, if it's something completely else, so that in itself is a kiyum in Simcha's Purim. And I happen, on a personal note, I happen to have a wonderful nephew who was born on Purim, and his name is Simcha. And I'm assuming that the Ruach HaKodesh that inspired my brother to name him Simcha is this idea that his existence is a reflection of Simcha's Purim, because anything that makes you happy on Purim day is in itself a kiyum of Simcha's Purim. That's how some Achronim explain. So that's a striking idea. Why should it be so different? Why shouldn't it be like Pesach, that the mitzvah should be to be happy about Pesach? So maybe that really is the message, and maybe the idea is that the whole point of Purim is seeing history in perspective, being able to find joy in things where you previously felt stress, and that's really the idea. And anything that will bring about joy, anything that will make you happy on Purim, even if it's not about Purim, but it's something else that makes you happy, that's the goal of the day, that's the focus, and that helps to create the right mood. So practically speaking, so how does that affect our hanhagas on Purim? And what about the, as we'll see, the somewhat controversial practice of the Purim spiel and of the different hanhagas that happened on Purim? So in its most basic sense, you find the source for this in earlier sources. You find in Rishonim, not the spiel specifically, but Tosfos in Masechta Sukkah and Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis talks about the Bachrim who would do things on Purim in order to make themselves more happy, and they would kind of horse around, and they would grab each other's things, and Tosa says that they didn't worry about gzela, they didn't worry about that being considered stealing, because that was all part of the simcha of the day. And that's something I want to come back to in a second. And you also find in the Agudah, another Rebbe Rishonim, that there was also a lack of concern for Nezikin. There's a lack of concern for damages that would take place on Purim. Again, that was part of Simcha's Purim. That part of the understanding, and what exactly that means is a discussion. That part of the understanding of Simchas Purim is that these things happen and we weren't going to be so makbidam. It's a big question, the halacha, whether or not that's appropriate or recommended. And the poskim write that even if there's a patur maker hadin, still Bezdin could get involved and draw a line somewhere. But you do find such an idea in these sources. The idea of a spiel, per se, comes up a little bit later. If you look in Dr. Sperber's book on the Menhagim, you can find a chapter on this. It's written by somebody else, has a discussion of when exactly this practice emerged, and it seems to be that it is a little bit of a controversial practice. I have to confess that there is what to argue about this. I remember talking about Torah Mada lectures. So Rabbi Schechter once gave a Torah Mada lecture here in Yeshiva, and the point that he started off with was that this yeshiva was founded by people who came from Volozhin. So perhaps it's appropriate for us to try to figure out what we should do. We have to see what the attitude was in Volozhin to know what our attitude should be here in YU. So that can have a lot of interesting ramifications, but just to keep focused on this topic, so what exactly was the custom in Volozhin? So it seemed that Volozhin was very into this. It seemed that Volozhin was very into the spiel. And it's brought down that in 1885, so one of the outstanding Bachram in the yeshiva did a perfect imitation of the Nitziv, and Nitziv was the Rosh Yeshiva at the time, and one of the outstanding Bachram did a perfect imitation, his style of speech, what he would say, how he would say things, the whole everything that we associate today with a Purim spiel. This Bacher's name was Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook, and would go on to great fame. And this is brought down in the, I think, say, for Moedei Raya. It's written in English, Celebration of the Soul. You can look it up. So, and the story then goes that this Bacher did a fantastic imitation of the Tziv, and everyone was incredibly impressed, and he had all kinds of jokes. And then many years later, so the Nisiv's great-grandson was a Talmud in Merkaz HaRav and did an absolutely perfect imitation of Rav Kook. And Rav Kook said, oh, he got me back. Okay, so the great-grandson came and paid me back for what I did many years ago. But apparently it seems in both cases that this custom was welcomed, wasn't at all looked down upon. And apparently, again, Volozhin being a forebearer of our yeshiva, that seems to be the practice in Volozhin. And as well, if you look in the, if you have the ability to look in the book, The Making of a Gadol, so you'll see that there is a story there as well, that in Slobodka, that was also the practice. This book is written about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky primarily, and it's there related that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky enjoyed very much the goings on Purim in Slobodka, where again, there was what they called a Purim Rav, who used to joke around. And again, apparently that was the minig there, and that seemed to have been accepted. My cousin told me that when Rav Dessler came to visit America, the Mechtav Milyo came to visit Cleveland, so he was in the Telz Yeshiva and he saw the whole spiel going on, he saw people were imitating the Rebbeim, and he was very scandalized by that, he thought that was horrible, and he wanted to put a stop to it, and he was a Mashkiach, so he wanted to get up and give Musar and put a stop to it. He said, how could you do such a thing? And Rabbi Meir Block, who was the Rashi Vintels at the time, he said, B'mechilas kavodo, you're coming from a different culture, I understand the American Bachram better, and this is what the American Bachram need, this is what we do here, and the spiel should go on. But in general, there is a tradition in many yeshivas of having these kind of things going on Purim, whether they involved imitating people or not, whether they involved what we call Purim Torah, making different types of jokes within learning. So there are various ways of looking at these minhagim. Rabbi Bleich told me today that he once saw a story somewhere about a certain Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva who gave a shir on Purim, and he was being Miyashiv Astira in Rambams. He was explaining a contradiction in Rambams, and he gave a whole shir for an hour, and it was all stray lumdus. There didn't seem to be anything unusual about it. So when he finished the shir, so they asked him, so where was the Purim Torah? So he responded, I made up both Rambams. So there was this approach in the yeshivas that people had different ways of celebrating Purim, and there are a lot of people who found that to be okay. I have to also point out that there are a lot of people who didn't find it to be okay. There are a lot of tshuvas written, unfortunately these are the ones that are more easily accessible in print actually, that a lot of poskim didn't think it was necessarily such a great idea, and just will first mention who they are before going into some of the details of what the problems could be. So earlier, it's not so long ago, maybe about 100 years ago, a little more than that, so the Rav of the Eidah Charedis in the community in Yerushalayim was Rav Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky. So in his tshuvas, the tshuvas Maharitz in Chelek Beis and Siman Nun Aleph, so he has a tshuva, actually Siman Nun Vav, he has a tshuva in which he addresses one aspect of Purim Torah, which he criticizes. And in general, he seems to have a very negative attitude towards the whole endeavor, and clearly doesn't seem to be such a fan. Along similar lines, a lot of contemporary poskim, Avram David Horowitz and his tshuvas Kinyan Torah B'Halacha, this is in Chelek Beis and Siman Kuf Chafei, if you want to look it up. And as well as Ravazi Yosef in his radio addresses that were printed in the Tshuva Sichav Adas. So he also takes this is in Chelek Hay and Siman Nun, so he takes a very, very negative view of such things, of the whole custom of a Purim Rav and a Purim Spiel, and he really paints it in a very negative light, and we'll discuss in a few minutes what exactly the problems could be. And as well as Moshe Sternbach, another contemporary Rav in the Moed Muzman, and this is in Chelek Beis in Kuf Tzadi Aleph, from one of the Hagos, also takes a negative view. And I have to also mention the late Rosh Yeshiva of Tar Vadas, however, from Pam Zechat Adish B'Kodesh L'Vrach, also in this firm, Atar al-Melech, where his ideas are printed up, also took a rather dim view of a lot of these things. So it seems to be that there is a little bit of a difference here in Minhag, a little bit of a difference here in position. Again, our yeshiva seems to hold the Minhagim of Elazim. But how exactly is that to be explained? So first, let's discuss a little bit, so what could be the problems? So what exactly is the issue, or issues, what exactly are the issues that could come up in the context of these types of Purim celebrations? So one thing to be aware of, is a general issue with laughter, in Yonim in general, is that the word we use for laughter sometimes, for joking around, for this type of thing, is leitzanus. So that runs a certain risk, and that risk is you could turn into a mullah. That's a pretty big one. That the pasuk in Mishlei seems to identify a malik as a letz. Right? The pasuk says letz taki upesi yarim, and that's a very striking idea. You know, if you're going to cast the Purim movie, if you're going to cast the Amalek Klal Yisrael movie, so the different models, different archetypes you could come up with for who exactly is going to be a malik. You know, sideshow Amalek is probably not the first one that comes to mind. The idea that Amalek is a clown, that he has a big red nose and floppy hair, floppy shoes and a big wig, it's not the type of approach we usually take towards the arch enemy of Klal Yisrael, that that's what Amalek is. It's a very striking idea. So Rav Huttner, Zechana Levracha, has a very sadistic piece in which he explains what exactly it means when we say that Amalek is a letz. And he explains that based on a comment that Rabbeinu Yonah has. Rabbeinu Yonah has on the pasuk says ish lefi mahalo. A person is known based on his praise. So what does that mean? It means you know what somebody's about based on what people say about him. It's usually not the case. Right? It's usually not the case that people are really judged by what people say about them. There are a lot of very wonderful people who nobody says anything about them. So what exactly does such an idea mean? So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that a person is known based on what he praises, that the most powerful ability a person has is to praise something, because that's what really indicates what you're really about. That it's not always fair to say a person is about what he is, even though it sounds fair, because you have goals you don't always live up to. It's hard, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. So who you respect, who you admire, that says more about you than anything else, who you look up to. So that's where Rabbeinu Yonah writes, this most powerful ability a person has is the koach ha-hilul, the ability to praise something. So by contrast, the most powerful negative, destructive ability a person has is the koach ha-zilzul, the ability to knock something down, to take away the respect from something. And that is what Rav Huttner identifies with leitzanus, which he says is really more properly translated as cynicism. That the attitude that nothing's important, that nothing matters, you knock down everything, that's what we call leitzanus. Leitzanus doesn't just mean joking around, that's still okay. But the idea of saying nothing is valuable, nothing's important, everything's a joke, so to speak, that's what we call leitzanus. And that's a highly negative trait. And that's what the pasuk means when the pasuk identifies a malik as a letz, because the Jewish people were very formidable at that time. They had a name, they had a reputation, and nobody was going to mess with them. The Medrash says that they were like a burning bathtub, they were like an ambachia rosachas, and that everybody was scared of them. And then Amalek came and they jumped in, and when Amalek jumped in, so everyone said, the Jewish people, they're not such a big deal, they're not so scary. So this idea of taking away chashivas, of taking away importance, that's what leitzanus is, that's what cynicism is, and that's certainly a very problematic thing, and that's where you find many expressions throughout the Talmud criticizing leitzanim, and the idea that any amount of leitzanus can dilute, can negate all the musar in the world, because if you don't take anything seriously, so there's nothing that can really get through to you. So on the one hand, that is a concern. That type of humor, that type of cynicism, that type of approach, that's one attitude which definitely does have to be very much taken as a threat. That's definitely something that is a threat to a healthy religious existence. So when humor is presented that way, when you have a cynical approach, that sarcastic approach to everything, that nothing really means anything, so that in itself is certainly dangerous. And that also leads, also relates at least to another problem, which is specifically an issue that the post can be very upset about when it comes to Purim Shpils, and something we'll have to discuss. And that is the idea, especially it's in the yeshivas, so people would sometimes imitate their rebbeim. So that attitude of that practice could, in theory, lead to bizayin talmidei chachamim, to embarrassing, to disgracing Torah scholars. And that, especially bizmaneinu, that especially in our day, is something that's a very, very severe problem and could really undermine all of Judaism. So that's certainly something that is a danger. That's certainly something that does pose a threat. And that's one of the major motivating themes that a lot of these poskim who criticize the Shpils, Raji Yosef and Kenyan Tari Balacha, those who discuss this, find this to be a very powerful issue which can't really be dealt with. Another issue that also was a risk, and this applies to everyone, not just Talmidei Chachamim, but if anybody is Chas V'Shalom going to be embarrassed by something that's going to take place during the Purim Shpil, so that's a tremendous issue. That's something that we could talk about for an hour by itself. I can't do that right now, but the Isser of Anos Dvarim, which is incurred when you hurt somebody's feelings, together with the Isser of Losisal Adchet, of embarrassing somebody in public, of taking away the Kavod HaBrias of a person, so that's a very, very serious prohibition, with very dire consequences, the way the Gemara says. And that's certainly something that's a tremendous risk. So that's also something that very much has to be protected against. So that's also something the post can mention. Another issue that the Maritz Tyshinsky focuses on, because the exact topic of the Maritz Tyshinsky's tshuva was making a joke out of issues in the Torah, taking parashas in the Torah and making a joke out of them. So he thought that was problematic also for a lot of the above reasons, but also for the reason of the fact that there is an expression the Gemara has in Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Aleph, that the Gemara criticizes somebody who makes a song out of Shir HaShirim. The Gemara says that's a bad thing to do, to make a Shir HaShirim, a song of songs, into a song, into a normal song. That's a bad idea. It's a question what that means. So there are Rishonim who give the impression that what that means is that to use any psukim and to use it for normal human enjoyment, not to take it out of its context of Torah, but to use it as a song, like to make yourself happy with a song, so that's an inappropriate use of Torah, and that's dangerous in itself. I think Rabbi Soloveitchik had a little bit of a different understanding of that Gemara, that the Gemara is referring specifically to Shir HaShirim, and that the idea is that Shir HaShirim is supposed to only be interpreted on the level of a muscle, and that to present it in the context of a human man and a human woman, that's what the Gemara was criticizing. But beyond that, there are those who took it in a broader sense, and said that any usage of psukim for personal enjoyment is in itself problematic, and that's what Maritz Tyshinsky focuses on as being one of the primary issues. Now, that's not an issue that's necessarily relevant to all the Shpils. The Shpils are more relevant to the other issues, so that's a real question. So how exactly do we deal with that? So on the one hand, you have to assume that there's a little bit of a difference in Metzius, that the difference between the yeshivas where this was accepted practice and among the places where this was not accepted practice, have to assume that there is a little bit of a different level of understanding, that the context is such where, as what Rabbi Elio Meir Block had mentioned before, the context where he said to Rav Dessler that you don't understand the American Bachram, that society does play a role, that living in a different context where these things are more accepted, so that creates a little bit of a different environment where things that happen on Purim are taken in a different context. And the idea that Purim therefore removes Yisurei Torah, it's not really what's going on, but Purim does create a context where things are taken in a different light. So that already helps things a little bit. And that's really the way Achronim explain that those Rishonim who say that they're allowed to steal, so to speak, on Purim, you're allowed to damage things on Purim. So there are Gemaras in other contexts which sound like when you're doing things for a mitzvah, so that gets you off the hook for things you do wrong. But that's a little bit harder to say. It's hard to say that, and that's why Achronim understand it differently. But it's hard to say that if I'm going to be doing a mitzvah, so I can damage your property. So Simchat Purim is a mitzvah, so I can run over your car. It doesn't really sound so likely. So there's a Chavis Yar like this, and others explain that it's not really that a mitzvah absolves you of responsibility, but when you have a context where everyone's involved in the same mitzvah, and they want to perform that mitzvah, so they're going to want to create an atmosphere where everything is a little bit looser. So therefore, people willingly give up their rights to have all the property protected, people let you steal from each other, steal from themselves, because they want to enjoy Purim also, that's what they want to be doing, and they create this atmosphere. So that certainly does play a role in the atmosphere that's relevant on Purim, that there is an atmosphere where things are taken in a little bit of a different light. And you could call that mechila, but it's a little bit more than mechila. It's basically that you've entered into a contract where you willingly want to have a different setting, because otherwise you yourself are not going to have as much enjoyment, and you want to enjoy the situation, so you know that that means viewing things in a little bit of a different light. To say, though, that straight mechila is a little bit difficult, because if we were really talking about bizyonus, so it's a question, we know the Gemara says that Rav Shemachal al kvodo kvodo machal, that a rabbi who earns respect, a rabbi does have the right to be mochel in that respect, a rabbi does have the right to say it's okay. But it's a question whether or not that would apply to bizyonus. For the rabbi to say that he's mochel on bizyonus, you can disgrace him, you can be mevazah him, so that's really not the case. A lot of bizyon atar, that's normally not the case. So you have to assume that what we're talking about here is not a bizyon. So why is it not a bizyon? So one reason is that the setting creates a different atmosphere. Another reason is that you have to be very careful in what you're doing. That you have to be very careful in what it is, the type of jokes you're making. That it does take a lot of chachma to do it effectively, and that's why spiel should probably always be done under rabbinical supervision, because it's not at all an easy thing. It needs more hashgacha than the food does, probably. It's not at all a simple thing to do, and it is tricky. It does take a lot of chachma. It does take a lot of balancing of different ideas and knowing what exactly people are bothered by and what exactly people are not bothered by. It's an interesting idea that we have a mitzvah in the Torah that the Torah says that you have to remember Maisa Miriam. That there are a handful of things. You thought you had to study all night for your test. You thought there's a ton of things the Torah wants you to know about. It turns out there's only a small handful of zechiras. Only a small handful of things you have to remember. So if you look in the back of the art scroll sitter in the back of Shacharis, so you'll find the six things you have to remember. So out of the whole Torah, one of the six things you're supposed to remember is the incident of Miriam. So what's the big deal about that? Why is that the biggest thing to remember? So the Mefarshim explained that you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara, so you should remember what happened to Miriam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe, and she got punished. Okay, but there are a lot of Averis in the Torah, so why is that the only one which gets a story and gets a mitzvah to remember the story? So Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher, who was the Mashkiach in Slobodka, so he explained that you have to understand that Lashon Hara is very complicated. That we have an idea called Avak Lashon Hara, that you have second degree Lashon Hara. And as the Rambam explains, how do you violate second-degree Lashon Hara? That if you say something positive about somebody, but it comes out negative, so that's avak Lashon Hara. So that's not really fair. If you're going to tell me I can't say bad things, okay, I'll be careful not to say bad things. But I can't say good things that come out bad. So what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to protect against that? So Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher explained, that's why you have a mitzvah of remembering Maisa Miriam. That you have to remember that Miriam meant well, and Miriam was a tzaddikus, and still she messed up. Still she tripped over this or Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara is very complicated. When you're dealing with human beings, you don't know exactly how they're going to react. You don't know how people are going to respond to things. You don't know how people tend to react to things you're going to say about them. So you don't know. So you're going to think something is good, and it's going to come out bad. So therefore, you have to do a lot of work in advance. You have to work to cultivate that sensitivity. You have to work to develop this perspective and know what it is that is offensive and what it is that's not offensive and know who it is you're dealing with. Otherwise, you're going to mess up. Otherwise, you're going to have problems. So it takes a lot of practice. And we have a hanhaga. We know they're Friday night, so we cover the challahs. So why do we cover the challahs? The Yerushalmi has a couple of reasons why we cover the challahs when you make Kiddush. So one reason is that we're afraid you're going to embarrass the challahs. When you make Kiddush on the wine instead of the challahs, you don't want to embarrass the challahs. So I'll tell you a little secret. You know, the challahs will get over it. And what you're going to do to the challahs a minute later is a lot worse. So the idea that you have to worry so much about protecting the challahs, so what exactly is that all about? So it's really the same idea, that if you don't want to embarrass people, if you want to make sure you're not going to hurt anyone's feelings, it's not enough to just live your life and say, I'm not going to embarrass people. You have to work very hard at practicing and developing a sensitivity and knowing what it is that's going to hurt people. So that's a very big element here, that it's very difficult to write a spiel, take my word for it, it takes a lot of effort, and part of it is you have to really work on having a sensitivity and knowing who you're dealing with and what you're saying, and making sure that the element that you're going to be addressing is one that is going to be taken well, is going to be taken right, and you should assume seikel hachmir, because we are talking about very serious yisurim, and when in doubt, leave it out. When in doubt, assume that this shouldn't be used, because you are dealing with very risky territory. As these poskim pointed out, there are tremendous yisurim that are relevant here, and it's something you have to know, A, who you're dealing with, and B, what exactly it is you're doing, and make sure it's okay. Here in Yeshiva, we have a long-standing tradition that many of the Rebbeim are actively interested in being portrayed in, it's more than Mechila, they are makbid that they should be in the Shvil, and if you don't believe, you can look at the videotapes, and you can see exactly the responses. And they're actively involved in the process. So you assume that there is a Mechila, and more than a Mechila, that those personalities who are involved to that extent are willing and happy to take a certain amount, then you still have to know within that what exactly that means and what's appropriate. And I said I want to go back to what the Gemara says about Milsa Beduchas. I think that's relevant here also. That when the Gemara says that there is an emah that has to be taken towards Talmud Torah, and that seems to be contradictory to the idea of having a joke. So he said one of the answers in the Gemara is that you start with a joke, but the content is serious. So that chiluk, I think, is a very important one, not just chronologically, but as far as content, it's a very big deal, that the essence of Torah, the content of Torah, and the essence of Talmidei Chachamim as well, that's a serious one. That's one that's not really open to being treated as a joke. But all the kalim, all the outside stuff, and all the techniques, and all the methodology, the opening, the things that lead into it, so that is external, and that hopefully the person also feels external to themselves. And that is something that's more open to being dealt with in this venue. And that chiluk, in a very general sense, is one that's relevant here as well. That things that hit the essence of a person, or of Torah, or of Talmidei Chachamim, that's pretty much off limits. But things that are more external, and the person themselves would feel are external, so that's where there's more of a room to allow some type of humor, again, assuming that the person is not going to be offended, chas v'shalom, and there's not going to be any other averus that come out of it. So just I want to mention one or two other averus you should be aware of, that one or two other sakanas that come up in the area of humor. So one thing I think is an important point, which I always wanted to come out on and say, that I think that one thing we should be nizer against is the practice that many have of the fake laugh. You know, the insulting fake laugh, somebody makes a joke and you go like that. So I think that's a highly inappropriate practice. Now, if the person is trying to be mevazeh somebody else, and it's an act of self-defense or an act of defending somebody else, that's one thing. But if a person is trying to make an innocent joke that's not offensive, and you respond in that way, so I think that's a very negative thing to do. First of all, it's negative because that's in itself an ostevarim, so that in itself hurts his feelings, and that's not nice. And also, you're discouraging Avodas HaKodesh. You've established that joking is a good idea. And, you know, on the SAT, they have a penalty for guessing, that they don't want you to just guess the answer. So they figure if you don't know the answer, you shouldn't try at all. Because if you don't get it right, then you don't lose any points. But if you get the wrong answer, so you lose points. So that's in order to discourage you from guessing. They don't want guessing. If you don't know the answer, you shouldn't try. So chas v'shalom, we should create such an atmosphere in the context of jokes that we've established that jokes are, for the most part, a holy activity. So a person's only going to make a joke when he knows it's going to go over well, because if it's not, you're going to be mevazeh him. You're going to make him feel bad. So that's a dangerous circumstance to create. And I think that that's very much in our interest not to create that atmosphere. And a person makes a joke. Doesn't mean you're mechuyev to laugh if you don't think it's funny. Okay, you don't have to go out of your way to laugh. But to actively be mevazeh the person because you didn't think the joke was so funny, so that's going to discourage him from ever trying again. And that's going to be a tremendous loss to the world. That's going to be something that's very negative. And who knows who that person could have been in the realms of comedy. But he's going to be scared off by your And as the famous quote went, dying is easy, comedy is hard. You know, comedy is hard. It's not so easy to make a good joke. It takes a lot of practice, and takes a lot of mesiras nefesh sometimes. And it's a big thing to be aware of. Somebody told me this story that Baruch Price told me a story that there was a guy who was trying to get into Australia. So, you know, Australia used to be a jail. You know, Australia used to be a jail for the people in England. They used to send all their prisoners to Australia. So somebody was trying to get in at customs to Australia. And they asked him as he was coming into customs, do you have a criminal record? And he said, no, I didn't realize I still needed one to get in. And the guy at customs was so upset, was so offended, that they deported him. They deported him back, I think, to New Zealand. He had to go back and try again because, you know, the guy got so upset. So a certain relative of mine who's in the room, I don't know if he wants to be quoted or not, commented on the chashivas of this line, that it's worth it. it's worth getting deported for the line. You have to have that level of mysterious nefesh. If you want to have a tzlacha in comedy, you have to be ready to give it all up. You have to be ready to really put yourself on the line, and that's a major thing. That's something that's very important. So you have to know that it's hard, and people who are trying should get all the support that they can get, and you shouldn't be mevazeh them. And another issue we didn't really talk about, but also the one that sometimes is relevant to comedy, is also the Gemara does say there is a prohibition of nivel peh, there is a prohibition of talking about inappropriate things in an inappropriate way, and that's something to keep in mind. That's not something that we allow for the purposes of comedy, and despite a lot of people's impressions of the contrary. So just something also to add to the list of things you have to maybe be aware of And they'd be careful for it. It's not something the post can discuss. I guess it wasn't an issue in the yeshivas in Lithuania, but is an issue in other places, and it is something that you have to be very careful of. So I just want to close with one vort, also related to Purim. So when we started off, so we mentioned that this was kind of a Torah model lecture, that this was going to discuss the interface of Torah and comedy. So it's just one vort I'd like to say that tries to bring the two together, so it's also related to Purim. So I figured it'd be appropriate to close with that. And I hope that that's okay. That once in NCSY Kollel, they were showing, some people have definitely heard this before, I hope you'll be mochel, that they were showing the Walt Disney film Aladdin, and during a break in the proceedings, so I was given the microphone, and I made the following observation, it's relevant to Purim, that the Gemara, not in Megillah, the Gemara towards the end of Maseches Chulin, asks, in relation to Purim, the Gemara asks, so we know that the story of Purim happened way after Chumash, but is there any remez, is there any hint of the characters of Purim in the Torah? And the Gemara says, for example, like, what about Esther? Esther minhat Torah minayin. Do you see anywhere in Chumash any reference to Esther? And the Torah says, yeah, there is. Vanochi hastir astir ponai. That Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I will hide my face. And we assume that that's not just a word game. It's not just that Hester, Aster, Esther, it's the same word, but it's the same idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence is not felt overtly in the Megillah, but we know that he's there, he's hidden. And that element of Esther is expressed in this pasuk. Similarly, the Gemara says, have you ever heard of Haman in the Torah? Haman min haTorah minayin. And the Gemara says, yeah, Hamin ha'etz azeh she'amarti lecha bilti tochal menu achalta. That Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam HaRishon, that when he realizes that Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, when it was clear that Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hamin ha'etz, did you eat from this tree? Hey, Memnon is Haman. And again, we assume it's not just a word game, but as the Vilna Gaon was quoted as explaining, and as Bali Musar explained in general, that what the Gemara means is, the Gemara really means the psychology of Haman, that where do you see the mentality of Haman, that Haman had 127 nations, everyone bowing down to him. There was one Jew, Mordechai, who wouldn't bow down to him. It drove him crazy. This one guy wouldn't bow down to him. That drove him nuts. So where do you find such a mentality? Where do you find such an idea? So Haman ha'etz hazeh, that Adam was able to eat from all the trees. The one tree he wasn't able to eat from, that was the Eitz Hadas, and that he couldn't take. He had to eat from that tree. So that mentality you find in Adam, Haman ha'etz, Haman min haTorah minayin. So along similar lines, you could ask, so if you see the film Aladdin, so where do you find Aladdin min haTorah? So Aladdin min haTorah minayin. So I thought the answer was, there is a Yerushalmi. The Gemara says in Yerushalmi and Brachas, that there is a bracha to be made on the mitzvah of din. That when you have a din Torah, when you have a bezdin, so you have to make a bracha. So what would the bracha be? So the Gemara doesn't spell it out, but you assume that the bracha would be, asher kishar mitzvos levitzivanu. Aladdin. So that would l'chara be the mucker for Aladdin min haTorah. But again, we have to assume that there's a deeper meaning, right? We have to assume that it doesn't just mean it's not just a word game. So in general, Mefarshim ask that there is a yesod Rishonim have that the idea of a bracha on a mitzvah is only on mitzvahs that only the Jews have. That mitzvah that non-Jews share, for example, like tzedakah possibly, there's no bracha on that. So the Mefarshim ask, how could the Yerushalmi say make a bracha on din? Din is one of the Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So non-Jews are obligated in din also. So how could you have a bracha on din? So the Mefarshim explain that you have to say that really the mitzvah of din for the world in general is fundamentally different from the mitzvah of din for Yisrael. Even though it may look the same on the outside, even though it may have the same external process, but the functionality and the goal and the essence of din is primarily, fundamentally different, and that's why we can distinguish and say you make a bracha on din, even though it seems to be a universal mitzvah, it's not really, its universality is a deception, because the mitzvah that applies to the whole world as a whole is very different, even though it looks the same, from the mitzvah of din for the Jewish people. So similarly, you could ask, where do you have an idea, Aladdin min haTorah minayin, right, that she thought that the girl who Aladdin marries, the princess, so she thought she had to marry only a prince. Right, and in the end, she ends up marrying Aladdin, who's not really a prince, because she thought that it was all based on the chitzonis. It was all based on what you look like, and having the whole externals, and having the whole credentials of a prince. And she didn't realize that it's really the internal prince kite that really makes a difference. It's having the internal qualities of a prince, and the outside is really external. So the question is, where do you find such an idea in Torah? Where do you find such an idea that two things can look the same, or and really have very different essences, or vice versa. So you find it from the fact that it's a bracha on din. The fact is a bracha of Asher Kishon Zatanu al Adin. How could you make such a bracha? How could you make a bracha on something which is a mitzvah for Bnei Noach also? So the answer is because it's really different. It looks the same, but it's different. And that's the mucker for Aladdin and Hataru. So I just want to quickly, Chazal, we spoke about, so we discussed a little bit the goals, the positive aspects of humor in a halachic and hashkafic vein, but on the one hand, so there is an aspect of coping, Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch's idea, that's a function of Mishmartim Ma'ob Nafshaseichem, that's a function of basic mental health, and that extends to a chesed also, and that's why the Gemara says Anshe Beduchanan, that's a good way to get a chelukum haba, it's an aspect of a hashivosolo, it's an aspect of chesed, we have to rechkamocha in general, and the Gemara says it's a very good pedagogical tool, you should open the Milsa Beduchasa, and we find a lot of examples about this throughout the Gemara, and we find the Gemara Bechol Neviyah, etc. And then we discussed a little bit the chiluk between men and women in this regard, the whole haflaz idea about the Yetzer Hara. We discussed whether or not the most beduchsa is really to chase away the Yetzer Hara, or does it also have another aspect of hachavas hadas. And we discussed a little bit how there's an idea of perspective that is encouraged by humor, and that's what the Rav thought there was the idea of halach b'drachav. And then we suggested halach b'drachav means not just the midah, but also trying to the midah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu dick away, and having this long range perspective that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, and aiming for that. And that's why that is Man HaMashiach, then we'll really understand. But Olam HaZeh, we don't really understand. We try to have Schok, we don't have Milui Schok. And that's the whole idea of Purim, that Purim represents a new Kabbalah Satara, because we weren't able to appreciate the Torah the first time around, but in the long range of history, we do. And that's also why Simcha's Purim takes a different form than other Yom Tovim, that the Simcha can be in anything. It doesn't have to necessarily be in the Chag itself. And then as far as that, the other things we do to create Simcha and Purim, so we discuss the Tosis and the Aguda, that there was a Heter Gzeil and Heter Nezikin because of the Hanhagas on Purim, but the Spiel actually is a controversial idea that in Velazhen, it seems, in Velazhen, our ancestor, it seems that we did have a concept of a Spiel, and other Litvish Yeshivas defined it also, but then you also find many Poskim who thought it was very dangerous and perhaps a totally terrible idea, and various issues of Leitzanis in the negative sense, of cynicism, issues of Bizarin Atara, issues of Onos Devarim, issues of making psukim into songs, all of those things that we discussed, why we might have a little bit of a different perspective here in our yeshiva that descended from Velazhen, how different issues of how the Metzias creates a little bit of a different climate, issues of Mechila, issues of still staying away from Bizai and staying away from Anas Devarim, and the like, and then we discussed some other Yisurim that may relate to humor in general, the Yisur, I think, of fake laughs, why that's a Hanhagara, and also the concern of Nivel Peh, and then we just mentioned this idea about Aladdin. We should all be Zoche that this coming Purim should help us to enhance this perspective, help us to develop the type of approach to life that will ultimately lead to the time when, in reality, Oz Yimalei Tzchok Pinu. Thank you very much. Have a fair looking Purim, a wonderful Adar. All should be great.